Ken, are you okay?
Hmm?
Are you okay, buddy?
Yeah. No, dude, I wrote Canvas all day. My brain's all fucked up.
Okay. All righty. You just look mad confused right now. It's pretty funny.
I'm so fucking angry.
All right. All right. Welcome to the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler.
And today we have a very, very special guest, our homie Natter Dabbit.
What's up?
What's going on, Natter?
Not much. Chilling. What's up?
You are a developer advocate at AWS.
Yes.
Working on the Amplify team?
Yeah, the mobile team. In the mobile team, we have Amplify, we have AppSync, Device Farm, a couple of other things.
What platforms does that support?
Pretty much all the platforms now. Like, it used to be just mobile, so they used to only kind of support native iOS and native Android. But, you know, we've now expanded. Now we do web, React Native, all that shit. It's kind of hard for me to focus with you drinking straight out of the Cuervo bottle.
Sorry, dog. This is America.
Welcome to the Undefined Podcast.
Precisely.
Time for a drink check. Natter, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking beer. I'm drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Classic.
I'd run next door and grab some beer because I don't keep the fifths of liquor in my office like some people.
I went upstairs and got it out of the kitchen.
I am sipping on that Grey Goose from the club.
Nice.
Very nice. And I got some Cuervo here. I don't know. I mean, it was the only thing. Liquor doesn't stick around long in my house, so I had to go up there and see what I had. There was like a quarter bottle of Cuervo left. As soon as we finish this podcast, I'm going to the liquor store. What do you guys think?
Classic. We were sipping wine all week in Paris.
Yeah. Paris was nice. We missed you there.
Yeah, we missed you.
Yeah. Fuck you guys.
I think I was there for like 6 days. It was my longest trip there.
Guys do all the things?
Yeah.
You guys went to Versailles, right?
Not together, yeah. But we went independently. Yeah.
Yeah, we left and like I'm following Jared on Instagram and like he told me he was leaving the next day. And then like 4 days later he's like still in Paris. Like when did you leave?
I got back Tuesday. Stay for another like 3 days past my stay. But I got to go to Versailles and I got to go to a bunch of museums and like I went to LVMH. That was awesome. The Louis Vuitton Foundation is just like super cool.
Dude, that one thing, it was like a fucking a bunch of like art exhibits in a room or some shit that you had on Instagram. That shit was fucking sick. What was that?
That was the Louis Vuitton. So there are two museums that I went to. Well, the first museum with like the infinite mirrors and shit, that was the Louis Vuitton Foundation. And that's just a really awesome, like the building itself is designed by Frank Gehry. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous museum. If you're in Paris, like the Louvre is cool and like you got to go see the Mona Lisa and shit. But the next stop is the Louis Vuitton Foundation. That museum is fucking awesome. Then the last day I was there, I went to Centre Pompidou, and that is a modern and contemporary art museum. It's like the equivalent of like the MoMA in New York, but in Paris. And that's where I was doing like basically looking. That's where I was like taking video on Instagram, and it was pure nightmare fuel.
That place looked crazy. Is that the one that has that big tube on the outside of it?
Yeah, it's the one with the big tube on the outside. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, there was very cool stuff there. I saw Picasso's, Matisse, like Chagall, like the like amazing modern artists, and then also they had the entire contemporary gallery as well. So that's where that was like pretty weird, like Otto Dix stuff, and like I don't know, just bizarro stuff. It was just fucking weird, but it was great. I mean, it was art, right? Like,
did you buy any more art for your house while you were there?
I didn't buy any more art.
Matter, do you know that Jared buys art?
No, I did not know that.
Do you buy art?
I have art here. Let me show you some of my art, actually. I'm in my office with all my art. This is from my boy, William Goodman. He's like a local artist.
Oh.
I have like four of his paintings.
That's dope.
I bought them like 10 years ago.
Dude, so basically what we're saying is that you don't buy art and thus like it's totally normal to buy art.
I create art. I don't know if you can see over my right shoulder here.
Yeah.
But that is a Chuck Norris poster.
It is a Chuck, but printed out in on 8.5 by 11s.
Individual pages taped together. If that's not art, then I don't know what is.
Have you been to the Hudson Yards in New York? into that mall?
Yeah.
Have you seen that art gallery? Like when you walk upstairs, it's to the right.
I have not.
It's crazy. If you're ever there, go check it out. They have some really cool artwork, and it's not like traditional art. It's like really like modern, like cool looking stuff.
I actually prefer traditional art. I want to see sculptures and shit.
I did plenty of that too. I went to the Louvre, and I saw like Michelangelo's sculptures, and it was so interesting to see. There are this I forgot what they're called, like the slaves or something like that. Anyways, he was like 28. He was commissioned to do these two sculptures that were going to go on the outside of some very famous person's grave, basically. And he ended up never really finishing them because he was commissioned to go do like the Sistine Chapel and shit. And shit, I mean, of course, that's Sistine Chapel and shit. He's commissioned to do the Sistine Chapel. But anyways, these two sculptures are the most remarkable stone human being. There's like these muscular dudes are in these weird shapes, and you're just like, holy shit, this dude just like chiseled away at this it's just remarkable. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. But yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That shit is dank.
Fucking awesome. Cause you're just like, how in the world could you? And then what was also interesting, so my mom was a designer, and she was telling me about, she's like pretty classically trained. She's telling me about, and I was FaceTiming her, and she's like, look at the feet. Like the feet of like Michelangelo used to do this thing where the feet of his sculptures were not actually like anatomically proportioned. So he'd actually make their legs and feet like gigantic, like just because it made it look more dope. And so like when you see this, so like you only will notice if someone called it out, but like I was like, oh shit, mom, like that's crazy. Like those feet are huge relative to like the rest of it. But like because it's seven, you know, it's 8-9 feet tall, like it looks cooler. I don't know. It was just really interesting.
That's Literally, fucking wow. dope, dude.
You could spend like an entire month in that place.
Oh, absolutely. You could just do that for an entire week and not even make a dent in it.
So when we were there, we went to the Louvre. We went to, Versailles. We did you see in the Louvre, there was like a statue. There's like four guys standing naked, and they're like in a circle, and they're looking down like at their junk.
No.
Like each other's or their own?
Like they were checking their own. Their own.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
Okay. No, I
didn't. Like it was a cock measuring contest?
Basically like a medieval or whatever. Like
they were recording their own undefined podcast?
That's sick.
Something like that.
That's awesome.
Were you guys drinking at the Frog?
I did not indulge at the Frog. There are many frogs in Paris, but not that one.
The Bercy Frog.
What's the deal with the Frog?
I don't know. It's just, I guess, the place where everybody drinks.
It's like the chain, I guess, in Paris.
Is that right?
Yeah, everyone was going there. We never went there.
Yeah.
That's like the drinking place where, yeah, I guess, historically people have gone.
Yeah. There was this one spot. I was with my friend who lives in Paris, and we passed it. And I think the place, the restaurant was called the Philosophes. Anyway, like Thomas Jefferson and Napoleon have eaten there, and it's been around there forever. And that's like its claim to fame, that like all these like important people in history have had a meal there. It was cool.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Did you guys go to that that quarter? What is it called? Like the Spanish Quarter or some shit?
The Latin Quarter?
Latin Quarter, that's right.
Yeah, that place is cool. We walked through there. We ate crepes. We chilled. We went inside the bookstore there. I forgot the name of it. The Shakespeare bookstore.
That place fucking rules.
Yeah, it's a cool area.
You guys go to that big ass park. It's like a park that has like these big ass bushes and shit and chairs, and you drink wine.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
It was fucking chill, dude. When I went with my wife, dude, we just rolled up on this park. And
I think there's the one where the Louis Vuitton Foundation's in that park. I forgot what it's called, though. It's
probably over there, but yeah. There was like a concert band playing like fucking some song that Dr. Dre sampled. So I bought this wine, and we like sat at this table, and like I was like, oh, this is my shit. We got all fucked up in the middle of the day in the middle of this park. It was crazy.
Sounds dope. Sounds enjoyable. The weather was so nice the whole week.
Really?
It was.
It was great.
I went to Paris with my wife too about 3 years ago, and it was like in June. So it was like a month after we just went, right? But it was during the 100-year flood. So there was like, it was like the worst week that you could have possibly gone. And then on top of that, it was like 20 degrees colder than it usually is. So it was like in the 40s and 50s and raining the entire time, right in the smack middle of the summer. And Louvre was closed. The river was overflowing, so our boat ride got canceled. Kind of sucked. We still had
fun. Does so.
Brutal. Did you do any shopping when you were there?
Not this time. Not really, no. Everything's too expensive in Paris for me.
Ken, did you go to do any shopping when you were there last?
I'm trying to remember. We got some shit, but nothing remarkable.
Yeah, it was pretty. I went to Galeries Lafayette, which is the Bloomingdale's. I did the Marais, which is the hip Soho-y area now. I just was not impressed with the shit. I went to Supreme. I tried. I went for it.
You didn't get any Supreme shit.
Did not. I mean, no. But that's because I'm getting old. I went into Supreme and I was like,
have you ever bought Supreme?
One baby, I don't know. I was like, this looks cool, but
it's so expensive. I went to a Supreme store in Switzerland, and first of all, there's a waiting line, to get inside. You have to wait in line and shit. And then when you get inside, the t-shirts are $2,000.
God damn.
Yeah. There's some dumb shit there for sure. I guess I was just looking for, I don't know what I was looking for. I was like, this could be a cool place to go. I don't know. What does Supreme Paris look like? To be fair, you raise a very good point. I don't think I really frequent Supreme anyways, but occasionally,
I wonder if all the people that we see wearing Supreme, do they really spend that much money on that? Or is that fake?
Fuck no. Dude, if you buy off the Supreme website, it's not that much.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. If you go on StockX, dude, you could get a fucking Supreme backpack for $300.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's not even like that. Yeah, if it's 2,000, dude, it's some weird ass markup because it's a rare one or some shit like that.
Yeah.
So you know what I did get today?
What'd you
get in the mail?
What?
A fucking tank top that says Space Force on it.
Oh my gosh!
Fucking sick.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I ordered my 4th of July shit today, and I ordered this shirt from that store that you posted, Oaf Nation or whatever or something.
Yeah.
Like that. Yo, and I don't know if it's that one, but whatever. It's got two fighter jets and one's inverted, and it says foreign relations.
Nice.
Oh God, fucking, I love that movie.
Dude, there was another one that was on there that was fucking sick. I forget what it was.
Dude, the Dick Wolf one is pretty fucking good.
The Dick Wolf one is lit, dude. Hold on.
Have you seen this site?
No, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
Holy shit, there's this site that's just super ridiculous, pretty right wing, honestly, Americana, and ridiculous t-shirts, and there's some really funny ones.
Okay, so there's two tank tops that I have in my cart from there. One of them is the skeleton. It's all vapor wavy. It's got the sun that's segmented.
Sure.
It's that with a skeleton in front of it with Ray-Bans on, and it says "Where the hose at?" But hose is spelled HEAUX. Yes, where the hose at. And then the other one is the same skeleton in front of a palm tree, one of those suns, and it says "Good times and bad decisions."
Okay.
So yeah. So speaking of weird, crazy right wing clothing, my cousin lives in Savannah, Georgia, and he's our family's in the clothing business, so we have all these clothing stores, right? But typically they sell suits and stuff to people that go to church, right? So, but their building in Savannah, Georgia became gentrified in a gentrified area. So now it's a bunch of people that are traveling, coming there to do sightseeing a little bit. There's high-end stores popping up. So they basically opened up this store for I don't know what you would call preppy people. So they sell I don't know the names of these brands, but the polos and the button downs, but they have this line of t-shirts that are super crazy right wing. Like if I saw this, I would probably be what the fuck are you really wearing this shit? But one of the t-shirts has Donald Trump, dunking a basketball on Hillary Clinton. Oh, and a bunch of shirts like that. It's crazy. Have you seen that stuff?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's apparently a thing.
I almost bought a Speedo at Ronald Reagan on it the other day. It's his fucking face on the dick.
Is that
incredible?
Is that flattery? I don't even know if it's
I think it's just dope.
It's just dope.
I don't know if it's disrespectful or not. I don't really give a shit. I just think it's funny.
And now I have the image of Ken in a Speedo. And now all of you do.
Oh, dude, you don't know about the Wolf Speedo?
The Wolf Speedo.
I think I remember that happening.
I very vaguely remember this.
I still have that Speedo.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ken, what are you working on this week, man?
I'm working on some canvas shit, boy.
Yeah?
Dude, I did the sickest shit, man. We had this, like... So, like, as far as, like, rendering a lot of things, React fucking sucks.
Yeah, so you were saying that somebody was like, oh, you did it in React? And you're like, no.
I did it in Canvas. So, like, the whole app's React, but, like, for this part, I just break out and just take the props and go to Canvas with it. And, like, if you were to render all these things in React, it would be, like, it was, like, 800-900 millisecond render.
Are you managing it with, like, one use effect and you just, like, do shit with it?
Yeah. Well, no, I have like a bunch of different things going on in there, right? But the actual thing that I'm rendering, right? Mm-hmm. It's like 700, 800 cells.
So you render one canvas element and then you go fuck with it in the DOM?
Actually.
Yeah.
I do some pretty wild optimization. So I render three canvases, all right? There's one canvas and that's the background canvas, right? So the background doesn't change much. It's like a grid, mm-hmm. right? It's like imagine like a grid lines and mm-hmm. like grids. So like that only changes if the width changes or okay. if any like anything that would affect the layout of that grid. So that very rarely updates, right? You just draw that. Then I have a second canvas, right? That's absolutely positioned on top of it. So you do canvas layering, right? Mm-hmm. So all of the different cells and their statuses and shit get rendered to that. Right. So the way that this shit is drawn on there is like batching. Like there's a lot of ways you can optimize canvas by not fucking with its like state machine too much and then like batching them.
Okay.
And then like, you know, like if you have to draw like a grid of like fucking 800 squares, right? You don't draw 800 squares, right? You draw like fucking like 16 vertical lines and 16 horizontal lines or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Like
right.
So like that sort of thing. And then the third canvas is actually crazy. It's whenever you want to do drag and drop. Mm-hmm. So the parent canvas container gets a drop event or drag events rather. So anytime you want to have like that, you ever start dragging, right? And you want like that little like ghost drag image.
You want the image to, you want a new image when you're dragging that like does shit while you're dragging it and you want it, then you drop
it. No. Like you ever like drag something and like you see like the ghost fucking image that follows your cursor?
Yeah.
So if you put a canvas on top of another canvas and you use that canvas, even if there's nothing in it, right? Even if there's nothing in that canvas, if you use that canvas to do a set drag image on the drag start event, right? It'll take a fucking slice out of whatever it's on top of.
Oh, that's right? Cool.
So that little canvas, I just position to the shit that I'm dragging. And take a little snapshot of that bitch off of the canvas. And then I get my clean little ghost image from this main big ass.
Dude, how tight are canvas snapshots? Like, I fucking love that. It's just
it's very, very gangster. But
nothing else works like that.
I have no idea. What is a canvas snapshot?
It's like you can like, you could draw shit, right? Like you would with like imagine you're doing like move to line two, fill in rectangle or some shit like that, right? Like you're drawing something. Then you can transfer it to image data.
And then you basically can like grab, once you like complete the path or whatever you want of it, you can just be like, give me that image. And it will basically take like imagine you just like grabbed that out of whatever the bottom of it was. You can just like use that as an image now.
Is it an image as in like a .png or is it just an image?
You actually set it to whatever the fuck you want, I believe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You specify it when you grab it.
Like in order to do in browser image manipulation, you actually use canvas to like rotate and like the way you do, like I've done this before. Like I did an image uploader that was like Instagram style. So you like have an image and like oftentimes there's this weird fucking bug when you do mobile web uploads in Safari where sometimes the image exif data like positions it like flipped or upside down. And so like you want to allow your users to like reposition the image. And there's like a naive way of doing it where you like redraw the image with canvas every time and you fuck with exif data to like do the switch and rotation. But a better way to do that is to like actually keep it in state, do a CSS transform to like show the like actual different like applications. And then when you're done, you take whatever the state changes and you like render to canvas, you make like, you paint with canvas once and then you like grab the image out of it again, you like grab a new image and then that's the image that's positioned correctly. So similar situation, like you just draw something new and you can grab an image out of it, but it's like very fucking useful for shit.
It's the way it's done.
It's awesome. Fucking
outstanding. Yeah. Like anytime you want to do any kind of modification of imagery, you need to use canvas. Is a great way to do it.
I actually don't even know how you would do it otherwise. I mean, maybe like SVG filters or something like
that. Yeah, but you would still need the canvas to take a screenshot of it.
Exactly. You'd still like some, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, dude, I can't even tell you the perf wins that I got.
What were you trying to do it with before? Just React?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was like, okay, right? But then like you hit things with certain scale and...
It was 800, it's 800 cells with animation. And they update a lot.
I mean, it depends. Yeah, I mean, it depends. It could be like 7,000 cells.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the reason that this is faster is that you're basically using like the GPU as opposed to like re-rendering things in the browser. Or
it's actually the React component lifecycle, which is a lot of the overhead. So rather than like having like all these things that are getting like reconciled and shit, right? Like you just fucking drawing. It's just a bunch of like length cached for loops. And you're just drawing shit. And yeah, dude, like shit that would crash the browser in the old way is buttery ass smooth in the new way.
So does this mean that there's an opportunity for someone to kind of build an abstraction to start using these things without having to kind of roll their own?
Well, see, there's the problem because like I've tried to build that abstraction, right? That React to Canvas thing.
Yeah, you've been talking about that. And
the component lifecycle overhead makes it not worth it, right? Like you can't hit those perf marks.
Right.
And like, it's really hard to abstract around doing it because a lot of the time you have to like really like fucking artisanally figure out how to draw it, right? Like depending on what you're drawing, you have different optimization opportunities because you batch things based upon like their commonality, right? So if a bunch of things are like the same color, right, you'll draw them all together or something like that. Or if a bunch of things use the same font or font size, you'll batch that all together. But again, right, like there's no concept of Z index here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're not layered and you draw two things, one over the other, whichever one comes second takes precedence, right? So you also need to take that order into account.
Which is so tough, like, with React too, because of like all the re-rendering and shit.
Yeah, I mean, in React it's fine when I use my React abstraction, right? Because like if things are in a hierarchical tree,
yeah, that's true.
Then fucking it's safe to say that, you know, if you have one that comes after the other one without a z-index attribute, it's gonna be over it, right? But if you do have a z-index attribute, what you need to do is you need to start managing them with levels, and then draw certain ones at certain levels. Right. When you're doing the pass through the level, it's a very hard thing to write like a abstraction that solves every use case around.
Makes sense.
I could do like good enough, but like you'll get 3-4 times the perf if you just draw the shit.
Crazy.
Bananas. Yeah. But that's what I've been doing all week, man. And,
Matter, what about you, man? You were traveling, you were in SF. What were you doing in SF, man?
Yes. Yeah, so yesterday we did a workshop for the startup accelerators. There was like three of them. So there was Y Combinator and then there was like two other ones. One of them was Stanford's startup accelerator. And the other one, I couldn't remember the name of it. It's some other startup accelerator there in San Francisco. So I pretty much like flew out there yesterday morning. I flew back last night, red eye, and I landed and I jumped on a podcast this morning. Then I did a few calls and worked a little bit today, and now I'm doing this podcast.
We're your second podcast of the day.
Yeah, we're like, oh
my you're God. Giving me sloppy seconds right now, Adam.
Basically, yeah.
Fucking seconds.
We had a nice talk on GraphQL patterns about the schema federation stuff that was released. I'm kind of curious what you think about that. But
you mean service discovery? The Apollo thing? Yeah, I saw it demoed at Apollo Day. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the next iteration of what schema stitching is or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they said. Or it's not schema stitching, but it's like different than that. I don't know. I think it's cool.
Can I just interject? I love that you say red eye the same way you say API.
I think
anything red-eye. with an eye. Yeah, so people like leave comments and shit on my YouTube videos about this stuff.
About API?
Negative reviews of my API videos.
Do they really?
Yeah, well, not when I say reviews, there's only been one, but he gave me a one-star review.
Fucker.
He said all his only comment was he doesn't say API like right or something like that.
Yo, at React Europe, I found some motherfuckers that were saying Babel. Oh my
God. Dude, that's a thing. That's a real thing.
Yeah, dude, I might have to call him out right now. Mr. Bacon Bricks, fucking Evan Bacon.
He does not say it that way.
Team fucking Babel.
Oh, no shit. Way, dude. Bacon says Babel?
Bacon says Babel.
Why don't you have... You need him on your show next week to discuss this in depth.
We need to discuss this.
Kind of figure out why this happened.
Like, I was just like, dude, like, I don't know, like, maybe... I don't know if we could be friends.
Well, have you ever heard someone pronounce CLI CLI?
No, that's not a thing, is it?
You've heard
it
that?
It happened.
Get the fuck out
it happened
here.
To me.
What happened to when you?
You slapped him across the face? What happened? What did you...
I don't know. I didn't know how to respond. So I put out a Twitter poll to see if this was like a thing. And I think 90% of the people said no, but I was surprised that 10% said yes. Wow. So obviously we're missing out on some like cultural thing.
As a joke. No, not even as a joke. Not even as a joke.
No, it's no. Like, I'm 100% serious. I think it's like
dome. They're saying dome instead of dom. It's like what?
Dome.
I think it's like in the Hispanic population. They might... Say that? I don't know.
What did you
say? They
say Klee?
Klee. I don't know. I just heard the word dome. Got all pumped.
I know. You did get all pumped.
What about you, Jerry? What have you been doing this week?
Working on the thing that I haven't talked about, that I can't talk about on this podcast, but it's going to be fucking lit. And working on Formic 2, getting that out. Finally got to use the new scheduler API.
Is that right?
For Formic 2.
Is that something we can use?
Formic 2, yeah, install Formic at next. The scheduler shit's not out yet, but it will be in the next release. I rewrote all of validation from the ground up with like scheduler in mind and then made it fully backwards compat, so that's cool. Basically, like the wrinkle that I discovered after talking, just thinking more deeply about it, was that with the new scheduler, which basically allows you to better coordinate and prioritize updates, when a user is typing, we run validation on change, like on every change event in React. It's really an input event, but a change event in React. So every keystroke, we run validation. But basically, we also update the input, right? Update the value. So the insight was to basically schedule that validation when it's run in a high frequency, like on change or on blur, at low priority, so it doesn't block user input. And then there's also like a way to debounce that as well to add like more. But the wrinkle is that not all validation is low priority. A validation before a submit, right, to ensure that the form is valid, that shit's high priority because it should block the user action. So that was the sort of wrinkle there. And anything triggered imperatively, I need to work on that API this week. Like, how should I allow people to trigger high or low priority validation? Or should that just be like something they do? I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
This Formic V2, is it going to have a CLI?
Not yet. Maybe though. I don't know. Probably not. No, it's not. It's just going to be backwards compatible, rewritten with hooks. Yo, one bug hit me pretty bad with hooks this week though. Not bug.
What was it?
So I was trying to
wait. Does it have something to do with some scoped or not scoped, but it has to have something to do with kind of like a subscription or some type of listener?
No, this has to do with like referential equality.
Ah, okay.
Referential equality,
or just like references, basically. Yeah, references or creating new functions. I don't know. Basically, what happened was in Formic 1, because it's a class component, the Formic component itself, all the helper methods are just like class instance or like class properties, right? So those are bound immediately to the class. So when you pass them down and they refer to like this.state, they always refer to the instance of state on that particular component. So you pass down these class properties, and when you were to check like, oh, between an update, like handle submit equals handle submit, it would like return true with a strict equality check. But with hooks, because handle submit like calls dispatch multiple times, I can't just pass down dispatch. And basically, because even with react.use callback, certain handlers had dependencies, certain helper methods had dependencies that would basically force them to be created on every like value change. So an example of this was the submit form depends on values. And if you wanted to do something like an autosave, which is what I was working on, where you want to like autosave the form every 300 milliseconds or, you know, or debounced like however often values change. The problem is that on every single update with hooks, React is going to generate a brand new version of like submit form because values have changed, even with use callback, which is fine if you're just doing like a normal fucking submit, right? But if you're doing this autosave thing and you need to debounce this function, it's not okay. So that was a bit of a bitch. Turns out there's a hook that basically transforms all that shit onto refs with use ref. And it's in the docs, like this like esoteric thing called like use event callback. And it's usually for like events and shit. But wow, holy fuck, was that annoying. And at the end of the day, like you basically have just reinvented like a class. So
So what do you think about, with that, there's a bug that we ran into around closures that has to do with when you're creating a listener or a subscription and use effect, you end up getting the wrong version of the state because you're getting the state that was available when that subscription or when that listener was created.
Yeah.
And the only way to get out of that is to use a reducer, but it's not that apparent, I don't think, when you're just getting started with it. Do you think that's kind of something that's going to bite a lot of people?
I think it probably already has bitten them, or is like,
It's a huge pain in the ass. And then they like fucking use ref. And then you're like, ew, I got to use fucking stupid ref.
Well, that's basically what is happening for, well, as similar thing, you have to put things on ref. Basically like instance variables are like, I don't know. It's just like closures are very powerful, but somewhat annoying to work with, I guess, in certain situations. The dispatch thing is just, I don't know. I also I don't buy into the, like, if you expose dispatch as your API surface, first of all, like you need to coordinate multiple dispatches often. Right. And so now you've now created like some sort of action creator in quotes, putting that in quotes, like from a Redux perspective. Right. So you pass that shit down. Right. But then you have to do with the thing that I just described or like, I don't know, like I feel like exposing dispatch from a library author perspective is like a pretty terrible fucking idea. Like the internal reducer is an implementation detail, in my opinion. That's me. It shouldn't matter. Like, nor should you know about like the if I'm a library consumer, if you told me like, oh, I have to dispatch these actions I have to remember, like, no, that's whack.
So I wonder if there's an opportunity here to kind of create an abstraction on top of the hooks to encapsulate the ease of use of use state, but with what use reducer brings to the table as far as having the state available anywhere.
It's weird, right? Because use state is actually calling use reducer internally. It's basically like use reducer zero. Like that's how it works.
I just use like 7 use states.
That's your grind? Yeah. I just default to be fair, most of our components are super fucking small, I guess. Because we've been using suspense for data fetching. So like we don't have a lot of data fetching states and shit like that. But I don't know.
So like all like my that canvas thing.
Yeah.
Almost everything's on the instance.
Yeah.
Because I got so fucking tired of dealing with side effects from state updates that I just store it on the instance.
Yep.
And I don't have any unwanted triggering.
Yeah.
I don't get triggered, man.
You get triggered, bruh.
So triggered right now.
Do you think that ultimately the hooks API is going to be good or bad for React?
I think it'll be good for React.
I think for what it's worth, I feel like React had a false sense of security, which was very good potentially for the, I won't say for beginners, but maybe for like intermediates. I don't know. There's something to like making you feel confident, even if it's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel one way or the other. It's kind of like it helps in some way, but it also introduces stuff that they're going to have to figure out if they're new to React. So I feel like whatever problems it solves, it introduced an equal number of problems. And for us trying to write documentation at AWS, we're trying to figure out now, should we use the functional components with the hooks or should we fall back to classes? And when we're getting into, we do a lot of GraphQL, so we have to have, you know, different things that show how to work with subscriptions. That's why I brought that up. And we're trying to figure out, should we use reducer and introduce that whole pattern to people that are not only trying to learn our stuff, but they're also trying to now learn what a reducer is and what these hooks are. Yeah, or should we just use classes? And then, you know, when you create a new app now with Create React App, it actually now uses a functional component.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you see Brian Vaughn's got a PR open on the React repo for use subscription? And also, I think he's like also mentions in the PR for use fetch. And this would be like a
bot.
Yeah, it looks like a first class because there's create subscription, but I've never tried it.
At Natter, do you use Urkel?
I haven't used Urkel in a while, but I'm an Urkel fan. Yeah.
The new Urkel's fucking sick. And I say that having nothing to do with it.
Is it to see your baby?
Yeah, today there was like a release of Urkel, a new and improved release. Oh my gosh, and they have their own website now.
Yeah.
Badass.
I think I think it's great because you always hear that joke like I'm an ideas guy. But I am very much an ideas guy. And I think it's great that some smart people got their hands on it and made it honest, so to say.
Yeah.
They really fleshed it out with the things that it needed.
Did they add caching and like normalization or?
Yeah, all this shit. I don't know about normalization, but in some sense, right? But they have.
We lost you, Ken.
These things called exchanges.
Okay.
How about now?
How about meow?
Meow.
Meow. Are you saying meow?
Meow.
Yes. What's the fuck is it?
Happiness in your household.
As he rips the fucking bit of Cuervo.
But seriously, though, like looking at Urkel and what they've done with it since you left and the website that's up now and it's like its own thing now, do you feel pretty nice about that? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think it's great.
That's a good feeling.
It's a great feeling, dude. It's good to see it get taken to a place that I couldn't take it to personally.
Yeah, I was talking to Vincent Reimer about sort of like just open source in general. And he was like, yeah, it becomes, if you're not, it's like the goal isn't actually to like have the most popular library. He's like, the goal should be to like influence the most popular library. And if you can influence, it's just as good, if not better than owning it because.
You don't have to do the maintenance.
Right. Exactly. And then I heard him say that and I was like, fuck.
You're sitting there maintaining all this shit.
Yeah. Well, you know.
No, I mean, you know, I don't. I love maintaining it still as long as I'm still passionate about the project.
True, true.
If I'm not passionate about the project, I won't even touch it. I'm not passionate about anything right now.
You're just doing. Just making that dollar bill.
You're passionate about making a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what I'm very passionate about. And I feel really good about the direction that's going.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
Dude, getting that paper is pretty sweet. It does also make... when that's ultimately your determinant or guiding your compass, does often clarify what needs to get done in a very way. Then like
I think the older you get, the more paper you care about.
Modern problems require modern solutions.
yeah. No.
Speaking of paper and getting in, Jared.
Yeah.
What are you doing next week?
What am I doing next week? I'm going to fucking Israel.
Yes, let's hear the deets on that trip.
To go ball out. No, I'm not going to ball out. So,
Nat, are you going too?
No comment. Yes, I'm going, but not with Jared and not at the same time.
Yeah, we're about a week off.
You too. Jesus Christ.
We're going to Tel Aviv. I'm flying not economy.
Wow.
With a client. To go talk about, to do some meetings with them, bring them around to some companies, make some intros on their behalf, talk about some products, some shit that we're building for them. And then I will not be going to the conference that I will not name because of all the stuff that happened around the meetup. And so they were also running the conference in Israel. So I'm not going to that conference. But everybody else apparently on Twitter that I'm friends with is going to be in Israel too, so I'll just hang out with them at night.
Ned, are you going to that conference?
I'm not going to that conference, but Jared, are you going to be scared to like post pictures of being in Israel so you're not associated with that conference?
I'll be honest with you. I'd go to the conference, man, dude. I went to that conference like 2-3 years ago. That shit was awesome. Israel fucking rules.
Yeah, just like probably not on. Maybe they'll be maybe we'll reconcile our differences.
You guys want to hear a funny story about me in Israel?
Yes, tell us about Ken Wheeler in Israel.
So, what is that thing called? The West End Wall.
That is the name of it.
Yeah. So, you know, we went on like the speaker tour, right? And it's me and Andrew Clark, right? And we're sitting there. And like they make you put on like this little paper yarmulke to walk up to the wall.
Yep.
So we put on our paper yarmulkes and you know, we're like, you know, 10-20 people, you know, you gotta like wait your turn. There's like people like
right.
You know, having fucking the wall and stuff. Yeah, they're having like life moments over there and shit.
Yeah, people are crying, it's like big deal.
It's intense. Yeah. So I'm just fucking sitting there chilling. And this like female IDF soldier walked by like smoking, all right, but with like all the get up and like a machine gun.
Yeah.
And
it's like Ken Wheeler's wet dream.
And I go, Jesus fucking Christ. Andrew looks at me and he like fucking holds his hand out and like points at the wall. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, I like point at the sky. I'm like, sorry about that one, JC.
Dude, he was Jewish, so you know.
He gets it.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, that's a funny
story. If my geography is correct, you were like a mile or less away from some very important places where Jesus actually hung out, huh?
Yeah. I think we probably went to them.
Yeah. It's a cool spot. I went there on birthright after high school. And did the whole, it's cool country. It's, you know, tons of problems, but cool country. Also, the when you do see a very, very attractive IDF soldier at age 19, well, we all know what happens next. Anyways.
Yeah, I read a book called Startup Nation, and it's about
Israel. Great.
Oh, yeah, you know that book.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book.
That was a super interesting book, and I learned so much about the Israeli business culture and why they're so successful. And I learned a lot about their military as well, believe it or not, because there's you know, quite a bit in the book about it. But essentially, like, everyone there has to go to school for like, I mean, not to school, but they have to go into the military for like 1 or 2 years.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't matter who you are.
Nope.
If you're male, female, you know, you're rich, poor, everyone goes. And it kind of was just read the book. It's a really good book. And it's all about tech, but it's also about culture. And it's about military. It's really interesting.
It's cool because then they leave the IDF and one, they've been trained. And if like that's where like they've been trained for various skills, right? And also it just breeds startups too, because you have guys from or girls too that are, you know, trained in computer science and come out of the IDF and they go, you know, make a startup with their squadron or whatever it was, right? And and also they build things internationally there from day one, because they know Israel's not a big enough nation to support like an individual startup on its own. So things are internationalized from the default. They think globally. It's kind of a different, whole different feel. It's cool. I'm excited for my trip. It should be a fun time. Tel Aviv is also pretty dope as a place to
Tel
hang.
Tel Aviv is the best.
It's pretty tight. And then there's
a good time there.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I'm pretty excited.
They have bottle service for like $150.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we were in Paris. Okay. So club story from Jared. We were in Paris and I was with Bacon and we're going out and we go to this cool bar called Lulu White. And
before you blow up Bacon's spot, realize like a couple hundred people are going to listen to this.
All right. Maybe we won't be with Bacon. I'm not going to blow up his spot. I'm just like commenting on the pricing of certain things. So we get to this, we meet some friends, or we make friends actually at this bar. And then I asked the bartender at this bar, and she was like, where is a cool place? Like, we want to go out to some sort of club or whatever. Like, what's the deal? She's like, go to this place called the Bada Boom. And we get there, we pull up, and it's me and Bacon and like these two people we met there on their honeymoon. They were American. They heard me cursing. They're like, oh, you're American. I was like, yeah, I'm American. So we became friends. We pull up to this thing. There's a huge line, like 50 people deep, and they're all like, oh, I guess we're not going to get in. I was like, one moment. So we walk to the front of the line. I go to the lady in front. I'm just like, so what's the deal? Can we like get a table? Like, what does that cost? Like, what's up? And I say this in English. She says, she like pulls back. She goes and talks. She says some shit to someone. She comes back and she's like, how many are you? I was like, four. It's like, how many girls? So I was like, one. Okay. Table will be 200 euro.
What?
I was like, okay, we were going to
spend. You shook it out of your sleeve.
She's like, we're going to spend at least that on drinks anyways. So I was like, okay, sure. Cool. Waltzing on in. Oh my gosh.
Bunch of salty Frenchmen in line looking at you.
Oh my God. We got looks. We got so many looks.
Oh, they probably wanted to
kill you. I would have expected Paris to be more expensive than New York.
Dude, and this club was fucking crazy. Yeah? I mean, it was so sick. It was very deep. I did not make many friends. The girls were not big fans of the Americans. But it was fun. Danced like an idiot. It was great. But that was ridiculous. It was like 200 euro.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money, but also just kind of not a lot of money if you think about
it. It's not a lot of money if you compare it to that act would cost in New York.
Right, exactly. That's like a $2,000 move in New York or something like that. Right. So, and I was like, I thought that was the minimum of like, that was just to get in there and then they were going to make me buy a bottle. That was the normal price. But no, that was actually. No,
the bottle came with the table.
The bottle came with the table.
Yeah, it was the same thing in Israel. I was like, what the fuck?
What the fuck is this?
It's almost cheaper to fly to Paris or Tel Aviv and just party for one night and come back.
What was also crazy was that was the like American asshole price.
Yeah, you know, that was bananas.
That was the American asshole price of this club. That was.
I was sitting there in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And it was like a club full of like 19-year-old IDF kids. And I was sitting there like
guns, with or without guns.
Without guns.
Okay, without guns.
And I was like solidly like 30 years old in the middle of this dance floor drinking out of the vodka bottle from the table. So I talked to my one buddy who's from Israel and he's like, what the fuck are you doing there? He's like, I'm coming to get you. I'm like, no. He's like, I'm coming. So we went out and had some dank ass bagel thing. It was sick. he pulled me out of there apparently.
Good times. Yeah, so that was my pricing story from Paris. That was great.
Noted.
Fun times. But yeah, man, it's a fun city. Really fun. Tel Aviv will be fun too. Crazy spot. Dude, there's so much tech out of Israel. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there is.
I wrote an article about consulting that got pretty popular in the last couple of months, and I wrote it like a year and a half ago, but I have a feeling, and I was talking about how much money I made. I have a feeling that Jared makes as much money as I wrote in that article in like a week or two. He just doesn't talk about it.
Not a week. But we do well for ourselves here in this particular podcast. I will say that all members of the podcast are financially safe. but that being said, you know, there's always it's interesting. What do you think is going to happen in the next? I always wonder what do you think is going to happen in the next 3 to 4 years with that? Do we think that automation is going to make us obsolete, or is just going to make
fuck no
fucking more complicated? Which is my thing.
The more automation, the more need to code this automation.
I think that's true. So I think consulting is going to actually be a great, great game for a long time.
Absolutely,
because there's going to be. You know, even when whatever company is moving to GraphQL, moving to React, they're not going to be at the bleeding edge. It's just like impossible. And so they're always going to need people to help them to move to the next thing or adopt the next technology.
Dude, there's no self-driving cars in the road, and voice assistants can't even fucking cohesively speak back to you. I think that we'll be able to retire before that's a problem, personally.
Yeah, it's true. I think with that, I have a feeling that our salaries are going to increase dramatically, because we were at React Europe and TJ Fresh was there. Ken, oh my gosh, you would have loved.
Yeah, that's crazy. Man.
Dude, that was pretty cool. Oh yeah, dude. Fuck, I can't.
You should have been there for this.
Fucking should have been there, man. DJ Fresh was the man. I had dinner with him. He's so funny.
You and him would have like bonded so hard.
Fuck, dude, he told me some crazy ass stories about just like everything being a DJ. But anyways, what he also talked about during his awesome talk, which you should watch on YouTube. It was great. It was his first time speaking, so that was cool. Anyways, he talked about how there's a million job shortage in the US for engineering next year. Fucking
really?
Million jobs are going to go unfilled.
So
So that's just going to crank salaries up.
You know what's crazy? And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Like, we grew up with desktop computers, like fucking downloading Pamela Anderson's titties and fucking Eminem songs off of LimeWire and hacking our computers and shit and doing all these things. And like, yeah, like all these kids these days, they can't even fucking type.
That's true. That's
right? They don't have the same level of computer. They can't even write cursive.
They don't. Right? They don't. How is that going to impact their shit? Like, you think there'll be like a golden era of like computer like nerding, or will they just be on that next level, or they will need Lego bricks for them?
I don't know. I think that generally speaking, there's not going to be as widespread of general computer competence and nerdery.
I don't know. I have to disagree with that. I see a huge push to coding and getting coding into schools and coding boot camps and like learning how to code, all this shit. It seems to be really popular right now.
Yeah, it is popular, but I mean, I think deep down it's not for everybody.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
I know so many people that I've tried to teach.
I know.
And they're like, not for me.
Dude, I have friends, they're both boyfriend, girlfriend, and they're both trying to learn eventually React, but just HTML and CSS. They're gonna go to boot camp. And I'm just like, guys, try out like free code camp for a little bit before you commit all this money. And I know both of them and I think they're going to do great. But it's crazy, yo. Like, it makes you think like everybody and their mother is going to start doing this, because I think a lot of people are seeing their jobs and they're seeing how they're seeing other jobs even that are getting replaced by automation. And I think people are really scared, to be honest.
They should be.
Really? I mean, it's true. And it's interesting that when you look at when people say automation, they act like automation is just growing from the ground. It's an organic thing, that there's no people actually behind the automation. The automation is actually a business in it of itself. And that's what we're part of, you could say, in some sense, anyone right. that's a software engineer. And when you travel around the world, we were kind of in Mississippi, at least in the United States, I'm sure we're in a situation where we're not really exposed to seeing what's actually happening in the world sometimes. And what we see are doctors and lawyers and things making, you know, a couple of hundred K. And if you're a good software engineer, you're probably making as much as them. But when you go into these other countries, like in Eastern Europe, I was in Prague, I was on a tour talking a lot about the community there. And this, basically, if you're a good software engineer in Prague, you're making 2 to 3X what the doctors and lawyers are making there.
That's crazy.
Damn.
Yeah, and this was the same thing that I heard also in other parts of Eastern Europe. And what I also am noticing is that at least right now, and this could be, you know, a temporary thing, I have no idea, but the wages are going up big time over the last 5 years. I literally, and people don't like to talk numbers sometimes, and they're scared to hear numbers or talk numbers.
Let's have it out. But
I got an offer last week, 900K if I hit some type of whatever thing, but the base level was in the range of like 450K plus 150K bonus and then 300K incentives, but that's basically almost $1 million. And I'm someone that didn't go to school. I'm someone that's just specialized in whatever, React and doing some cloud computing over the last few years.
Yeah. I think that
half a million is very common these days.
Half a million. So my guess is that within 2 years or so, you'll see architect level, like serious high-end US-based engineers that are going to be like the head of front end, you know, your lead front-end engineer or your lead back-end engineer, like in the $600,000 to $800,000 range.
Easy peasy,
maybe even more, with incentives to go over north of $1 million. And
I also see it being distributed.
There we go.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning, I don't think everybody's going to stay in San Francisco for that much longer.
Oh, yeah. No, they're moving to New York. They're moving to Denver. They're going to move elsewhere. So I was having a really interesting conversation with Harrow from Algolia, and at Harrow M, if you're curious, and about salaries and stuff. And it was crazy to hear that. I know this anecdotally, that a company like Facebook or even a company like Algolia will, or any, like they make half as much as we do in the US oftentimes. If you go to Europe, like a same software engineering job in New York or SF, maybe it's just like 150, that same gig in London or in Europe or in Paris or whatever is going to make $70,000.
is going to be a $70,000 gig, which is pretty crazy when you think about it, right? But I don't know. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. About what do you guys think about changing like payouts based on where you live?
I think that's bullshit.
Exactly. I don't like it either.
You think it's bullshit?
It's an artificial thing. It's not a real thing, right? Like we're not gauging you based on how talented you are and how much value you're bringing. We're gauging you on how much we can get away with screwing you over, basically. Okay. That's the way I look at it. Because like if you're performing better in San Francisco or you're performing better in New York, that's one thing. But if you're performing equally and you're living in Thailand where your cost of living is $500 a month, that doesn't mean we should pay you $10,000, you know, a month less or whatever, $5,000 a month less, whatever, $1,000 a month less.
That's a very good argument.
Pay for your value. And as a company owner, I might not enjoy that, but I think that's the inevitability. I think everything when it comes to being distributed, when it comes to technology, ends up turning into the inevitable. And if you go ahead and move towards the inevitable now, you're going to go ahead and take advantage of what everyone else will end up moving to one day when they are forced to and they don't have an option, you know?
So let me play devil's advocate. I think that one, we have to, when you pay someone and they're an employee, do you pay them in money or are you paying them in wealth? I mean this in the most technical definitions of money and wealth. Wealth, let's define wealth here. Wealth is the ability to manifest things that you want on command. Money is a very specific thing. Money is a store of wealth. It is transferable, it is standardized, and it is a unit of measure. This is like the technical definitions of money. In prison, cigarettes can be money. Let me explore my example even more. If you have $1 billion in Antarctica, you have a lot of money, but you're not very wealthy. You can't really do shit because you can't spend that money in Antarctica. If you are in New York and you've got $1 billion, you are both you've got a lot of money and you're also wealthy, right? So, you know, wealth and money are not the same thing. Money is a proxy for wealth, but wealth is what you really want. You really want the ability to do it, to manifest shit whenever, right? So when you're paying an employee, the question that I raise is, are you paying them in money or are you actually paying them for their ability to manifest shit? And what I mean by that is if you live in a different place, that costs different amounts. And so if your baseline is I'm paying you to be able to do this level I'm giving you the wealth, right? To do whatever you want, but I'm giving you this level of wealth, and how you get there monetarily may differ country to country, but I'm giving you this set living style or whatever. That's my compensation package is wealth, not money. And in that situation, then it does make a lot of sense to pay the market rate for that level of wealth wherever you are, whether that's in Antarctica, right? Let's just play pretend here versus New York City. The things you would compensate your employee with if they were living in Antarctica or living in Manhattan would be different things, right? So that's the question there is, or when you think of compensation, are you compensating directly in money, in which case you're right, or are you compensating them in what fuck they can do in return for working for you, right?
And I agree with that, but I think in a free market, you're not going to be able to do that because your competition is going to come along and pay that person more than you are.
Or they're going to pay them less than you would, right? Because like you're going to pay them the market rate. You're not going to pay extra if you don't have to, right? You get the same engineer from this place for that lower price. Anyways,
Ken has to roll.
Yeah, I think Ken has to roll too. So let's wrap it all up. So do we have any picks for the week?
I have a pick. Drizzly. It's an alcohol delivery app.
Drizzly.
That's right. And I get alcohol delivered to my house.
So you don't even have to go to the store.
I don't. I was going to go to the store and then I just don't have time for that right now. So I'm going to get booze delivered.
Booze delivered. All right. That's fair. What about you, Natter?
So I guess my pick is going to be, fuck, I forgot now. Oh, let me see here. You can go ahead, do yours.
Okay. So my pick for the week is Gerhard Richter. This dude is a visual artist, this German visual artist, and I saw a bunch of his work at the LVMH museum in Paris. This dude is on a different planetary astral plane than the rest of us. He's just got awesome shit. So one day I hope to be rich enough to buy one of his things.
So my pick of the week is Claremont Lounge. It's this place in Atlanta. It's basically this really old bar, and it's kind of a really crazy place, and you should go if you're ever in Atlanta. I haven't been there in a couple of years, but I just had a discussion with someone, and they were asking what's a unique place to go, and I said the Claremont Lounge. And I don't really want to spoil it for you, so just do some research or just go there and show up and have a good time.
Lit. Word. All right. Well, Nader, thanks for coming along, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
It's been real. How can people follow you and get connected?
I'm Dabit3 on Twitter, Medium, and GitHub. Dabit and the number 3.
Medium this week. Bad week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm about to pull off a Medium, by the way, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like whack, right? So they lost Free Code Camp. They lost Hacker Noon. Did they lose Hacker Noon?
Yep.
Damn. Brutal. Anyway,
yeah, they defaulted to a paywall, and I don't know how long this has been going on, but I tried to post there a few weeks ago, and I noticed this. Basically, if you post, you automatically are put behind the paywall. You have to opt out of it. So I think a lot of people got confused, and they've been posting just like they have been, but they didn't realize that they're actually posting now behind a paywall. So I think until they change that, it's going to be hard for me to continue using it, honestly. Yeah, and I understand that a company needs to make money, but I feel like they could have done it in a maybe a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Good things never last, right? It was cool. I just think it's over. But anyways, thanks for hanging. And Ken seems like he's left, so we'll sign off for Ken. So, thanks for hanging out. What's your next conference? Are you doing anything? You're traveling a lot, right?
I'm going to NodeConf Netherlands next week. I'll be at React Norway the week after that. And I got a bunch of other conferences like React India. I'm going to be doing the first GraphQL Asia meetup in Hong Kong later this year. Reactive Conf. Yeah. So just follow me on Twitter. I'll be tweeting about all that stuff.
Word. Well, thanks again. And for the Undefined Podcast, I'm Jared Palmer. He's Ken Wheeler. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. If you're interested, follow us on Twitter at TheUndefined.io or check out our corner of the internet at undefined.fm. We'll see you next time.
Peace.